fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The New York Giants are ready for their first dress rehearsal of the preseason. Remember, they didn't play most of their starters last week against the Detroit Lions. Up on Saturday, the Houston Texans. We'll talk about it next, live on the Big Blue Breakdown. Hi again, everybody. Paul Dottino back with you on the Big Blue Breakdown as we do our weekly live Wednesday night show. If you're joining us here in real time, it's 8 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard as we prepare for at least 1 hour of Giants football talk. If you guys want to get in here, we've got the chat open. We certainly would love to answer your questions and respond to some of your comments. Now, if by chance we get such a flood of calls, or not calls, but chats near the end of the hour, yeah, we'll extend it some more. Why not? Look, this show belongs to you folks. This is all about the fans. It's all about what Big Blue Nation wants to know. Now, this week, the Giants will take on the Houston Texans, a team that won the AFC South last season with a 10-7 record, and then lost in the second round of the playoffs to the Baltimore Ravens. So they've got a lot of talent. Now, from what I understand, talking to people in Houston, they will try to play at least some of their starters in this afternoon 1 o'clock kickoff against Big Blue. What will the Giants do? Well, it seems, according to head coach Brian Daboll, that he is going to try to play a bunch of his starters, if not all of them, this weekend. Now, scratch the guys who are hurt. We understand that. I mean, Malik Nabers is not going to go. You folks are well aware of what happened to Nabers during the course of the week over at practice. He did tweak his ankle. The Giants don't believe it's serious. He was already jogging without any kind of brace or boot or anything on the foot. So they feel very optimistic about him getting ready very, very quickly. And remember, you know, the regular season is still a whole month away till the Giants will take on the Minnesota Vikings. So, you know, a lot of panic about nothing on that front. And then there's obviously the Tyrone Tracy story. Now, this spectacular rookie running back twisted his ankle the other day. In fact, I guess it was yesterday. He was trying to return a kickoff on dry grass out at the Quest Diagnostics Training Center. And the ankle just simply twisted on him. They had to come out. The trainers did. They looked at him. They put the soft air cast on him to take every precaution possible. And they caught him. You know, there was a hush amongst the people there. Like, okay, how's this going to work out? Well, as the reports have come in, Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, the most reliable of the folks who usually comes out with these things, did say that it was not as serious as feared, and it just turns out to be a simple ankle injury, and the Giants are obviously hoping that he'll be back as soon as he possibly can be. So we figure it's going to be X number of weeks, but at least from what we could tell, there was nothing broken, and you don't have to worry about him being a season-ending injury. So that's really good news on the Tracy front, and obviously much relief also on the Malik Nabers front. All right, so I want to start talking about what's going on this week in the game, as well as went on at practice, but I do want to get to Watson Graves, who already has a posting. And he says, players that have impressed with other than Eric Gray, is Jordan Phillips, Deontay Johnson. Thoughts? Well, Deontay Johnson, linebacker out of Toledo, came in as an undrafted free agent last year, impressed during training camp, stuck around on the practice squad, and to be honest, he's got a nice frame, sturdy frame, inside linebacker, really good against the run, has shown some coverage skills. They certainly like him. He's had another good summer, but again, now he is nicked up. And anytime you get nicked up during training camp and you miss time, well, you're missing opportunities to impress the coaches. So that's a bit of a sticky situation for him because, as Brian Daboll has reminded us many times, the team has to play with what they've got, and the calendar continues to move. The clock continues to move. All of a sudden, before you know it, it's going to be opening day. And the Giants have to make their cuts to 53. And if Johnson cannot get back on the field and to continue to put good stuff on tape, how are they going to justify keeping him? So he's kind of working against the clock right now. And so do I think he's got a chance to be in the building as potentially a practice squad player? A potential prospect who could always be called up later on in the season? Yes, I do. But I think the time that he's missing right now because of injuries is probably going to cost him a legitimate shot to make the 53. I mean, I'll give you a great example. Okay? He's up against, in the inside linebacker spot, he's up against a guy like Carter Coughlin. He's up against the Darian Beavers. He's up against the Matthew Adams. You know, these guys are all on the interior in the linebacker spot. You know that McFadden and Okereke are obviously going to make it. I mean, let's not kid ourselves there. So, you know, if those other guys who are healthy are able to go out and practice as they have, and they've done some good things at practice, and now they've got a preseason game coming up on Saturday, which Johnson is not going to be available for, well, that's just all the more chances for those guys to try to secure a roster spot that Johnson really doesn't have an opportunity to battle for. So in answer to your question, as far as Johnson's concerned, I think it's looking kind of sketchy for him when you consider, you know, his opportunity to make the roster. Now, you asked me about Jordan Phillips. Jordan Phillips is a very interesting situation. A lot of folks in the building believe that the Giants' defensive line is one of their strongest units. Well, if that's the case, then that means they're going to have to cut some pretty darn good football players. What do you do? Well, you know that Dexter Lawrence is the man among boys there. And you know you're obviously going to keep Nacho. So those two guys appear to be your two starting defensive tackles. What do you do behind them? And to be honest with you, it's a tough call as we speak. It really is. I just don't know right now because the competition's too close to call. And you have a mixture of different bodies in there. Now, Phillips, I want to say it was back in 2019, had 9 sacks, I think, with the Buffalo Bills. Okay, that's great. But that was like an aberration for him. If you look at his career, that was the one year where he really got a healthy pass rush on the quarterback. He's been around for the better part of a decade and has never been able to duplicate that number. So you have to wonder about that. Now, on the positive side of things, he has been banged up a number of times in his career and he's healthy now. So that's good. He has a chance to compete. He obviously has experience. What else is on the positive side? Well, he's got the connection to the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, Joe Shane and Brian Daboll decided to bring him in here for a reason. Now, will they find enough gas in his tank to suggest that he belongs on the 53? I still think that's yet to be determined. I mean, I appreciate, you know, the fact that he's come in here as a free agent and you know, is doing everything he can to make it difficult on the coaching staff. And he has. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I mean, you got Jordan Riley back there. You got DJ Davidson back there. Some people really like rookie undrafted free agent Casey Rogers, who has been in the mix. You got Elijah Chapman in the mix of defensive tackle as well. I mean, how many can you keep? Probably four. So it's really going to be a battle. And I think that, you know, these next couple of weeks, whether it be in training camp or these, you know, the preseason game against Houston, the preseason game against the Jets the following Saturday. And then there's also, right, then there's also the Jets dual practice a week from today. These are all the different things that are going to be graded. Here's the one thing I can't tell you. See, folks, I'm very upfront with everybody. I tell you what I can't tell you or what I simply don't know. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to smokescreen you. I'm not going to bluff you like a lot of writers will do. I'm going to tell you flat out. Here's what I don't know about Jordan Phillips. How is he doing in the classroom? How's he doing with the playbook? Shane Bowen, first year with the Giants as the defensive coordinator. Has he picked up the plays? Is he fitting well into the scheme? Is he meshing well with his teammates? That stuff is impossible, really, to identify firsthand. Now, why is that? Maybe this is a really good starting point. Cecil McCaptain, by the way, says no way they cut Johnson unless it's a season-ending injury. Cecil, the problem is, again, he's not competing right now. And let me get Watson off here, just so Cecil, you can get your name up on the show. There you go, Cecil. Okay? The problem, again, let me just go back to this, and then I want to address the bigger issue. The problem here is that those other backers are getting opportunities to continue to compete. They're available, they're on the field, and they're putting good things on tape. Johnson did too, but he can't add to his collection of good practice reps, or for that matter, good team reps. He can't do that while he's hurt. That's an issue. It may not be fair, but that's an issue. Now, I will tell you, while the coaching staff has had some nice words for Johnson as little as last week, it was also expressed by the coaching staff he's going to have to show some stuff on special teams as well. And that's pretty obvious, because you look at the Giants backers, and if you've got McFadden and Okereke as the two inside starters, well, they're not going to play special teams. McFadden might, but I don't think so. You know, he busted out last year with over 100 tackles. I don't think he will. So here's the thing. If you're not going to play those guys on specials, then the backup inside guys, whoever they are, right? Whoever they are, they're going to have to play specials. Well, guess what? Carter Coughlin is a good special teams player. Matthew Adams is known to be a good special teams player. Darian Beavers will do everything and anything that they ask him to do. He is a very willing participant and has been on special teams throughout training camp. Johnson right now is unable to get on the field. So all three of those other guys have done a lot to help their cause. So I'm sorry, Cecil, to be perfectly frank with you, unless Johnson can get on the field really, really, really soon, it may not be a fair fight. And if it's not a fair fight, then he's not going to win it. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles. But that doesn't necessarily mean he'll be out of the building. Again, like last year, doesn't mean you're out of the building. Just means you don't get to be on the 53, maybe week one. You could always wind up being in the building on that 17-member practice squad. Remember, 16 players plus one international player. And I think Vicatamny, the Irish kicker from Rutgers, will be that 17th player as the international player. Okay, Cecil has something else for us. Let's see what he says here. He says, Chapman stays, Phillips is gone. Boy, I want to get back to that other topic I was going to get to for you guys. But let me address this first, Cecil. Chapman, Elijah Chapman out of SMU, incredibly interesting. I'm not sure if he's even 6 feet tall, to be honest. So he is short. That is the only negative against him. Okay? He is thick, built like a fire hydrant. He has a hot motor that does not stop. He will play through the whistle every single time. He's got an incredible advantage in leverage. Andre Patterson, the Giants defensive line coach, was talking to us this week. Okay? And he was asked about Chapman. He flat out said, I always have to remind my defensive linemen about getting their pads lower. Get down, because we all know leverage is the key in the trenches. Obviously, strength, power, that's all right. That's all great too. Leverage is really, really important. Well, he said, Chapman's the only guy I never have to talk to about getting down because he's already got a low center of gravity at about 6 feet tall. So his leverage is always going to be on point. That's number one. Number two, assistant coach Patterson also said to us, and I'm pretty sure I heard this correctly. Now, although he only coaches the D-line and the edge rushers, because he's involved with them now too this year, unlike last season, that Chapman is the strongest player on the team. Remember, years ago when Tom Coughlin was here, Chris Snee, annually, was the strongest player on the team. Chapman, according to Patterson, I think I heard correctly, you know, there was no rock concert going on in the background, so no reason not to be able to hear him. I'm pretty sure he said he was the strongest player on the team. Now, of course, Patterson is only dealing with the D-line and the edge rushers, but maybe he also checked with Aaron Wellman, who was in charge of the strength and conditioning program, and maybe checked with him and found out numbers-wise that Chapman is the strongest player on the team. So when you combine leverage, a hot motor, and strength, you got the makings of a guy who's going to be a real pit bull in the trenches and a real problem for people. Now, you got to spot him. He is only going to be able to play in certain situations against certain teams. I mean, there's going to be times if he's going up against a guard or a center that's one of these mammoth bodies at 335, 340 pounds, you know, and if they've got power and there's some elite guys, they'll probably swallow him up. He's not going to be able to play full games. He's not going to be able to do damage each and every week, week in and week out, against some different styles and different levels of quality of interior offensive linemen. But I don't think there's any doubt that Chapman could potentially, in some key matchups, against maybe some offensive linemen who aren't as big, who aren't as strong, who maybe have balance issues, who maybe don't have a fast get-off at the snap, who maybe don't always play to the whistle. There's going to be times where Chapman's going to be able to use some of these factors that we talked about that work to his advantage to help him win a particular snap. And when you consider that the Giants already have some really good competition at defensive tackle, well, the truth is, he wouldn't have to play a whole lot anyway. All he needs to be is a role player. So I think there's a chance for Chapman to make it. There's a chance. I still don't know if he's going to be there. Okay? There's certainly an opportunity for practice squad as somebody that you'll be able to keep in the building. We always have to say that now because, again, as of a few years ago, 16 players on the practice squad. And I think Chapman is the kind of guy, Cecil, and then I'm going to get to, I see Real Cold Z and G-Men 7 are also chiming in. I'll get to you guys in just a second. Cecil, to finish the point, I like to give complete answers to everybody's questions and comments. And I know that takes a little long sometimes, but I figure that's why you guys came to the show, right? You want a full answer. Here's the thing about Chapman. Because he was basically overlooked as an undrafted rookie free agent, who only came in very late before training camp, after the Giants saw him as a rookie invite in the spring, chances are he's really not on anybody else's radar. And that's part of the paperwork game that you have to play in this league when you're going to try to get somebody through waivers and get them to your practice squad. Sometimes, okay, I know we all like to say, keep the best 53. Well, that's not always true. The fact remains, while you say keep the best 53, keeping the best 53 doesn't necessarily mean the most talented 53. It means the best 53 that fit your needs based on specific positions, specific units, specific functions, a la special teams. You may cut a better player, per se, because you need a guy who is just so good on special teams that he may not be as good as that other player, but he does special so well that you figure you have to have him. I mean, I'll give you a great example of a guy like that. Miles Boykin, okay, former Notre Dame receiver. He's about 6'3 and a half, 6'4. Was with the Pittsburgh Steelers for a couple years. Hasn't done much in his NFL career in the standard offense as a wide receiver. But for those of you who know who Miles Boykin is, he is a very good. In fact, let me go beyond very good. He's an excellent coverage guy on kick coverage. Did you see the other night what he did to Detroit? He blew up the kick returner, had the ball bounce out, and they said the kick returner was down, so it was not ruled a fumble. But that was razor thin, because the return guy did go down, and then the ball popped out. But Boykin blew him up. That's what Boykin does. That's how he made his hay in the National Football League, as an absolute demon on coverage units. Now, he's a wide receiver. I'll be frank with you. I don't know how in the world you could justify him being one of the top six wide receivers on this team. I don't see how that's possible. But if they believe that his special teams talent is so critical, I mean, he's that good at it, then maybe they find a place for him. And now that's going to come at the expense of somebody else. So anyway, when we say best 53, we're talking about the best fit for the 53. We're not necessarily talking about the most talented players. And I think that's very important to keep in mind, folks, as you try to play with your own list of 53 players and maybe try to predict or guess what the Giants are going to do. Or maybe when their 53 comes out, you say, oh man, I can't believe they did that. Well, take a step back and think for a minute and figure out, okay, they kept that guy. They let that guy go. Let's see, what's the possible reason here? All right. So that kind of answers that question just a little bit about Chapman. Oh, let me go back to finish that. Sometimes the 53 is because you are really, really, really concerned that a guy is going to get claimed. And let's say you are very confident that one of your guys deep on the depth chart who was under the radar and didn't get a lot of ink, didn't get a lot of play, didn't get a lot of commotion. Oh, let's see. we think we could sneak him through. See, you can't sneak through a guy who has a great preseason. Chances are that's not going to happen. The guy has a great preseason. People know about him. And especially if he does it in the games, not just the training camp, but if he does it in the games, the tape is out there. People see the tape, and they may very well say, I want to grab that guy off the waiver wire, and then there's nothing you could do about it. But sometimes a guy who kind of flies under the radar because maybe he didn't do spectacular things during the preseason games, but he had a great training camp, that's a guy you say, maybe we pass him through waivers. He sneaks through, nobody makes an issue out of it, and then we can immediately scap him back and get him on the practice squad and keep him in the building. So keep that in mind. That's another part of the best 53 that we talk about all the time. And I love the extended practice squad. Oh, guys, I got to tell you, my goodness, when the NFL expanded the practice squad a few years ago, you know, obviously COVID had a lot to do with that. Oh, awesome. I absolutely love it because it allows you to have all these guys, extra guys in the building, okay? They understand your playbook. They're with your coaches. They have camaraderie with the teammates, okay? They're learning your system. You could coach them up. That's how you build. You know, with free agency and the salary cap, it's so, so hard to build. Because free agency in the cap rips your team to shreds usually after 3 or 4 years. But the practice squad does allow you a sporting chance if you've got good scouts and good coaches to extend your roster and get somebody useful out of the practice squad. I know I went off on a tangent. Cecil, I really, really appreciate your comment. And it really led me to hopefully an education for some of you folks about some of these things that go on. All right, we have another one here. Real Cold G, how do you see that CB2 spot shaking out, Paul? Look, you know I've been a Cordell Flott guy. If you know anything about me, you know I'm a Cordell Flott guy. Came out of LSU. He's tough, got a good mindset, assertive, confident, has skills, has length, understands that as a corner, you have to forget about a bad play and bounce back immediately. So he's got some real good football instincts and smarts. He's been through some injuries the first couple years. I think I've always said this, despite the fact that they need him in the slot in his first couple years here, they had to play him in there for some, I've always said he's a boundary corner. There's no question in my mind that's what he is, okay? He's got the ability to do it out there. He's got the length. He's got the straight line speed. He's got the ability to use the boundary, that is the sideline, to his advantage. Remember, guys who have to cover the slot need the hips and the feet and the quicks to be able to go left and right because they're covering a guy in the slot who has all of that field on both sides of his routes to try to go out and catch a pass. Cordell Flott knows how to strategically use his defense against routes where he can use that sideline as the extra defender so that when you're cutting off half of a receiver's routes, Cordell Flott knows how to anticipate and how to close on the ball and make good plays against the sideline. So I'm still a big Flott guy. He's banged up right now, got the quad. You're not going to see him this week, I don't believe. So Nick McCloud is in all likelihood going to be the starting corner opposite Trey Banks. Now, Nick McCloud, I tell you what, he's like the Julian Love of this team. People called him that during the course of the week when they wanted to speak with him in the media sessions. Nick McCloud is a smart, steady, consistent, reliable, and durable football player. He's also a terrific gunner on special teams. And to be frank, I think that's part of the reason why the Giants probably are a little hesitant Although right now, he's going to have to step up ahead of Flott to become the starting corner opposite Banks. But I think they're a little hesitant to have him out there as the full-time starting corner. He can play slot. He can play boundary. He can play safety. Such a versatile player. He's a coach's dream. Every time he gets in a game and plays, he never hurts you. Okay, so he doesn't have a ton of interceptions. All right, so he may not make a bunch of big plays in terms of making turnovers and stuff. But here's the thing. He will never hurt you. He's just a good, steady, solid, sound football player. And he's got a good size frame on him for a corner. And he's got some length. I've always been a big Nick McCloud fan ever since he got to the Giants. And often wondered why he didn't get more playing time. But there's always been people in front of him. And again, they love him as a jack of all trades because you can plug him anywhere. And they love his ability on coverage units on specials. You're probably going to have to lose him on specials if you're going to make him a full-time corner. I don't know how the Giants feel about that. That's kind of a tricky thing right now.
Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys. How's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. All right, let's see what else we have here. We'll take that one off the board. We will go back to G-Man 7. It's supposed to be Chapman. Might be the biggest sleeper given that Dex will get more of the interior attention. Well, I will tell you this. Dexter Lawrence does get an awful lot of attention. And Nacho was talking about it actually to us, I want to say 2 weeks ago. He laughed and he said, you know, it's not just Nacho now. It's also Burns and Thibodeau on the edges. The Giants have three potent defensive weapons now on their defensive front. And Nacho's kind of laughing about it. He's like, hey, good. Let them figure out who they want to double on those three guys. I'm going to be one-on-one. I'm going to be able to get some eats, you know. So Nacho is extremely excited about the fact that offenses now have to figure out which one or maybe two of the other three giants on the starting unit in the front four are going to wind up collecting double teams. So, yes, in theory, what you're talking about is great. How does Chapman necessarily benefit from that? Well, first, he's got to make the team. Anybody who winds up playing the three technique next to Dexter Lawrence is obviously going to benefit from not only the attention paid to him again, but the attention paid to the outside guys. So thank you, G-Man 7, for your comment. Mark Bennett says, I think Boykin makes it. Well, again, if you were at the game the other night, or maybe you saw the preseason opener against Detroit, oh boy, man, oh man, oh man, you saw that coverage, you saw him come down and absolutely whack the return guy. It's hard not to be impressed with that. I mean, he's long, he's strong, and he's got that frame, and he just gets down there in a hurry, and he's not afraid to hit people, and he's just a really, really good special teams cover guy. I just don't know if the Giants have the luxury to use a roster spot there. You know, as we've been talking about on this show and also on Big Blue Kickoff, I think the Giants have to keep Tommy DeVito, so they're going to have to keep three quarterbacks on the 53. That's going to take a spot away from another position. So, I don't know, Mark. I don't know. I could understand it if they do. Right now, I'm on the fence. I'm probably saying no. But there's still a couple of preseason games and another week of practice to make that decision. Actually, no, the 53 is going to be decided on the 27th. And the Jets game is the 24th. So it's two preseason games plus a couple of days after that before they have to make the cut to 53. All right, Cecil's back with me again. We won six games last year. We can't afford to be picky. We need all the talent we can get our hands on. Cecil, I understand, and I promise you, there will be more talent on this 53 than there was last year. That's clear. Just by the abundance of talent that's on the 90 right now, they are going to have to make some very difficult cuts to get to 53. Much more difficult, and in many more instances than they did last season. I will tell you this, okay? Joe Shane and Brian Daboll just did some interviews with SiriusXM NFL Radio yesterday. And if I'm not mistaken, Joe Shane said they had gone through, I think him and Daboll had already gone through two different versions of their early 53. Okay, so they're already thinking about it. Things can change. Obviously, there are injuries. Obviously, there are guys who can step up late in training camp and maybe lock down a spot. And there are also guys who could screw up and play themselves out of a spot. I feel very, very confident, though, that this 53 will be better than last year's 53 when they broke camp. I don't think there's any doubt about that whatsoever. All right, appreciate the comment, Cecil. All right, let's see. We go back. Well, Mark has another question, and I don't mind going back to him because it's a good one. Isaiah McKenzie or Gunnar Olszewski? We have been wrestling around with this one on the Giants broadcast team for the last several weeks. Isaiah McKenzie has a longer and stronger resume as a receiver than Olszewski does. Both of them play special teams, coverage and returns. Olszewski is, in my opinion, the better return guy. He led the league once over 11 yards per punt return with the New England Patriots several years ago. Both of them are tough. Both of them work extremely hard. Both of them are not afraid to take a hit. Both of them are slot receivers. McKenzie has also done a lot of end-around stuff, jet sweep stuff, and has run the ball. Olszewski really doesn't do that. So McKenzie offers you more versatility and more on the resume as a receiver. Olszewski offers you more, I believe, on special teams. McKenzie also has the Buffalo Bills connection, which, as you know, is very important to Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. That's why he's here. It's one of the reasons why he's here. And Brian Daboll can't say enough of great things about Isaiah McKenzie. I personally would not get rid of Gunnar Olszewski. I can't forget what he did for the Giants punt return team last year. It was a mess. Gunnar came in after being claimed off waivers from the Steelers and immediately took care of that unit. Made it a non-worrisome factor. And then to boot, return one for a touchdown. I can't ignore that. The other thing I would say about Olszewski is that he handled the ball flawlessly against Detroit the other night. Wet conditions, sporadic rain, at times heavy, at times light. Isaiah McKenzie had a muff on a kick return. And I think if you look throughout their careers, Olszewski has had fewer problems with ball security than McKenzie did. So, if it's me, and I'm making that call tonight, I'm keeping Olszewski. But there are other factors, and there are other weeks to go. Appreciate that, that question. All right, we go to Wheel Cole G. I see a lot of people saying flat is too light to really impact that spot. Do you think that matters a lot? Actually, Cordell Flott plays bigger and tougher than what his frame would say. He has a tougher mentality. He is not afraid to come up and support the run. If you've watched him over the last couple of years with the Giants, he has never shied away from a tackle. He always gets in there and hits as best as he can. So, no. My answer is, I don't believe he's too light to play boundary corner. No, I do not. And I think he's got all the requisite skills to do it. And I know for a fact that inconsistency is the biggest concern with him right now amongst the coaching staff. Because there are some days he plays at a very high level in training camp. He's shown it. And then there have been some other days where he just wasn't as sticky as he needed to be, and maybe didn't focus enough. And it's that inconsistency, I think, that has the coaching staff a little bit concerned. Again, a guy like McLeod, you know, his floor is really high because he just doesn't make mistakes. He's very reliable. Flott's been a little bit up and down. But when he's up, he's really good. No joke. He's really good. I've seen it. All right, Real Cold G, appreciate it. Asking, when all said and done, who do you see our starting O-line? Well, that's a problem. Boy, I could go into a real, real long dissertation about this one. Giants right now, I believe, as it sits going into the Houston game, I think John Michael Schmitz is, as they've ramped him up, I think he'll get enough snaps this week that they'll probably give him a shot to get some snaps against the Texans. I suspect that. I don't know that. I think that they will probably put Van Roten at right guard next to Jermaine Illuminor at right tackle. Andrew Thomas will be the left tackle. Now, John Runyon came up with a sore shoulder the other day, so I would anticipate Aaron Stinney probably starting at left guard against Houston. So that would be the starting five this week. We did see Evan Neal, by the way, take a handful of snaps with the second unit as the right tackle in practice yesterday. So Evan Neal, who has been behind the eight ball because he has not been getting on the field due to ankle surgery back in January, has reinserted himself into the competition. They've got to ramp him up. So I just don't think he's going to get any reps this weekend. But as time moves on, if he can show that he is able to stay on the field, he is going to be allowed to compete. And that could jumble the entire offensive line all over again. Coach Carmen Brasillo, first-year offensive line coach with the Giants, admitted the other day, it would have been nice going into this game if they had had their starting five set. Not possible. Ben Roten got here very late. Runyon now with a sore shoulder. He's missed time. JMS, John Michael Schmitz, the center, sore shoulder. He's missed time. I mean, you know, three of the candidates, you consider Neal as well. So Neal, JMS, and Runyon, because of injury factors, all missed some time here during training camp. And then you got Van Roten, who just came in late, about a week or so ago. So, no, they don't have their starting offensive line set. They just don't. And the calendar is starting to turn. So the Giants need to figure that out. And I know, a bunch of you right now are sitting out there and you really want to smash your computer screens and you want to throw things against the wall and say, oh my God, how could this happen again? Well, here's the good news, and there is a silver lining to this. Even though the line has not been able to gel and mesh and become the tight-knit fabric that they want it to be at this point, the good news is they've got some talented, experienced offensive linemen who have proven in this league that they can be sound, reliable players. That's good. Because whether it's Van Roten, Illuminor, Stinney, Runyon, all of these guys have put enough of good plays on tape at the NFL level that you could feel like that's an upgrade over last year, no matter what. Last year was a disaster. We all know that. I mean, it couldn't have gotten any worse. These guys, this collective group of offensive linemen, okay, who are, you know, in this mixture, because Azudu is going to be a reserve. Let's make that clear. He's a reserve. He is not in contention for a starting job. But the other guys I just mentioned are all in the picture to compete for a starting job. May the best five win. Okay, and ultimately, it's clear that based on their resumes, whoever those five turn out to be, that will be an upgrade for the Giants, and they believe that those five, whoever they are, will be enough to be a functional offensive line. They're not going to be an all-pro offensive line, okay? Don't kid yourselves. It's highly unlikely that they'll be a top 10 offensive line even. But what they want to be able to do is at least get into the middle third, right? You got 32 teams in the NFL. At least get into that middle third. Be an average offensive line. That's good enough for this team to compete and to have a chance, especially with the weaponry that Daniel Jones will have in the passing game. So I don't know if that necessarily answers your question, real cold G, but that's the big picture as it stands right now. All right, let's see here. We're going to go to Sal G. I've heard other broadcasts say, I guess, Flott had an up and down preseason so far. He's been inconsistent. I already mentioned that to you just a little while ago. When he's been good, he's had really good days where it's like, wow, yeah, he could lock that down. And then there have been some other days when he hasn't been locked down. And he's allowed passes to be caught against him. And you say to yourself, where'd that come from? Because yesterday, he was really, really good. So it's that inconsistency right now that has got the Giants a bit perplexed about him. But here's the problem. You can't get consistent unless you're on the field and continue to play. The only way to find consistency is to keep playing. And what happened? Another injury. Oh, man. I've had enough of those. I'm just, you know, heck, I got my injuries out of the way before training camp. Thank goodness for that. Because I got to run up and down the sideline all the time. And don't want to do that when you're hurt. All right. Gerald Abram. Is there a scenario that they keep three quarterbacks and four running backs? Well, Gerald, yeah, I do believe they're going to keep three quarterbacks. I mean, as I sit here today, I don't see how they can cut Tommy DeVito. I just don't. I get it. We've waffled about this now over the last 5 months, I guess, on every single Big Blue Kickoff program. Even, I think, we've waffled a little bit here during this show. But let me make something very, very clear. More and more teams are probably going to keep three quarterbacks this year after the NFL had a record number of quarterbacks start a game last season. I think that trend is going to start to show in how many people keep a third. I ask you, Tommy DeVito, as a number three in this league, are there that many more number threes who are better than him? I don't think so. I really don't. I think Tommy DeVito is one of the better number three quarterbacks in the NFL. And if you think teams are going to start keeping that third QB, you can't cut him. You'll be taken. It's that simple. As far as four running backs, well, Tracy's injury kind of puts that situation into a whole new light, as we say, because you're keeping Singletary. You're obviously keeping Gray. And I would think Dante Miller is number three. Now, Gray has virtually no experience because last year he played mostly as a return guy instead of a running back. And Dante Miller is extremely raw. Both guys have had good training camps. Miller since the beginning. Gray has picked it up in the last week or so. So, yeah, three for sure. Four. Woo! Can the fourth guy play special teams? How about that? You know, they just picked up a guy the other day. And let me call him up here on my little roster sheet because it's important to note Lorenzo Lingard came the other day, number 28. They exchanged that spot with. Oh, my goodness, I'm forgetting now. What do you call it? Jayshon Corbin is gone. He was waived injured. And then I'm forgetting now for a moment. See, I'm not going to BS you folks. If I forget and I have a quick brain lock, I'll tell you I have a quick brain lock. They wound up picking up, you know, this guy off Jaguars, was cut by the Jaguars practice squad. And he's actually gotten some reps. I don't know enough about him. I know he was well-traveled in school. Was at Miami. Was at Florida, I believe. I believe it was Akron. Really had, I think, over 600 yards once in his college career. Did show some good hands. I don't know enough about him, really. I haven't seen enough of him to know if he's worthy to be kept as the fourth running back. So, right now, to start the season, I'm probably inclined to go with three. But it wouldn't shock me if they keep four, if they feel like they got somebody they really can't get rid of. You know? Gerald, I don't really have an answer for you right now. And again, I tell people at the same time, too, everything's fluid. It's even fluid and in flux for me. I mean, I'm watching practice at training camp, and then I'm watching the games like you guys are watching the games. I know you can't see training camp practice, but we're making everybody who sees these practices is making their own evaluations at the same time. I think that's still to be determined. I waffle on that one. That's one of the ones I'm waffling on. I'm not waffling on the quarterback anymore, though. I'm saying they got to keep three. DeVito's going to be the third, at least if it were me. All right, let's go back to G-Men 7. Wow, we're almost an hour in, but you guys keep firing off questions, so maybe we'll hang with you for another half hour. We'll see. G-Men 7, Daniel Bellinger was a difference maker his rookie season. Bellinger, he's getting cute. All right, G-Man 3, getting cute there. D-Bell, never heard him called that before. And Theo Johnson, of course, the rookie from Penn State, should give us a solid duo. All right, the tight end spot is another interesting spot because Bellinger's obviously going to be here. Last year, he was banged up. I don't think he played nearly at the level that he wanted to. He was also inconsistent. He drew 6 penalty flags last year, which is not great. Some of them were in key spots. That's not great. He was required to do a lot more blocking because the Giants' offensive line just couldn't get it done. And that didn't work out that great. Daniel Bellinger is going to want to try to get back on the trajectory that he showed as a rookie and really have a breakout season in year number 3. I know he's got the ability. I know he's got the want to. I think it's certainly possible, but the Giants do need that from him. That's number 1. Number 2, Theo Johnson. Very exciting prospect. Really, really exciting prospect. Tremendous athleticism, as advertised. Is going to have to be get stronger at the NFL level, of course. He was a man among boys, believe it or not, sometimes at Penn State, with his frame and his length. And he was used a lot as a blocker. But here's the thing. The NFL guys are a lot stronger. So right now he's got rookie strength. So he's got to get stronger quicker. In the pass game, he's got to be coached up into the NFL complexities of a really good passing game because they didn't really have one at Penn State. So that's another challenge he's got. Do I think at some point Theo Johnson could challenge for a starting level type job? Well, it depends on if Bellinger can hold him off or if Bellinger stays healthy or gets hurt. It also depends on how quickly Theo Johnson is able to adapt to the NFL in all the ways I just talked about. I think at some point, Theo Johnson could start in a double tight end set, and maybe he even becomes tight end 1 before the season is over. I don't want to put a ceiling on this guy as a rookie, but long term, he's a very exciting prospect. There is no question about that. Absolutely no question. But that's for another day down the road. For right now, let's pull the reins back just a little bit. I do believe that Chris Manhertz, who has quite an impressive frame, I mean, from the moment he steps on the field, it looks like an 18-wheeler coming down the turnpike. He is a big boxcar kind of man. Tremendous blocker. That's what he's done in the NFL. And that's why the Giants brought him in here. I think he'll be the third tight end because Lawrence Cager has been battling a hamstring injury and now a groin injury. And I think that's to his detriment as he tries to earn a spot on this roster. So I think it's those three tight ends that I mentioned at the moment that would have spots on the 53. We will see how things develop the next couple of weeks. All right, let me just take a quick couple of seconds timeout, and we're going to be right back and take more of your chats here on the Big Blue Breakdown on New York Giants on SI. See, I told you that'd be quick. I hope you didn't go anywhere. Go get a beer, go get a soda, go get some pretzels, take a you-know-what timeout break. Nope. The little ad bumper that we put in there, it's just more for technical purposes. And we try to get back with you as quickly as we can. All right, let's see what else we got here. I'm going to try to go back to some more of these questions. Oh, boy. We're going to take it to the bottom of the hour, I think. I think we can do that. I think my voice will hold out. We got practice tomorrow. Let's see. There's a practice tomorrow. Then there's a, on Friday, is a walkthrough in the morning. Then the team boards a flight to Houston. And on Saturday, I'll have the radio play-by-play call on WFAN at 1 o'clock. Bob Pop is going to be doing television on Fox 5 with Carl Banks and Phil Sims. I'll be doing the call on the radio with Sean O'Hara. And we're certainly looking forward to what we think is going to be a very interesting game on Saturday because the Giants are expected to play most of their starters. We're not exactly sure how much, but they're going to get a good look from what we understand. So that's going to be cool. Looking forward to that. And folks, again, if you're out at the beach, having a picnic, doing a barbecue, don't have the TV around, throw the Giants on WFAN, and I'll tell you what's going on. All right, let's see, what do we have here? We have Real Cole G again. We're in a bit of trouble still with that O-line. Well, it'd be nicer if it was settled, Real Cole G. I'm not going to lie to you. It'd be much better if it was settled. But it's not. That's the reality. So what do you go back to? You fall back to the talent level and say, all right, these guys, this group of guys, this collection of guys that are competing for starting jobs, it's a higher level of guys than they've had the last few years. That's all that you can hang your hat on right now. I know that's not what you wanted, okay? Sit down. It's okay. I understand. It's not what anybody wanted. They would love to have had the starting five with a nice permanent marker and wrote them all in. I personally would love to have had that myself. I'm a big proponent in that. Look, you guys, if you listen to me at all over the years on WFAN or ESPN before that, or even Big Blue Kickoff, you know how I feel. I've always believed that, especially if you're constructing a new starting five offensive line, they should get snaps as a five-man unit in each of the preseason games. Maybe it's only a series or two or a quarter, but I think they should get snaps in all three preseason games because the starting offensive line needs that chemistry. They need to bond together. So I'm not going to lie to you. I'm telling you flat out, I think it's very disappointing that they haven't been able to do that. The only good news is this. Jermaine Illuminor at right tackle and Greg Van Roten at right guard played a whole year together in those two positions under Carmen Brasillo with the Las Vegas Raiders last season. So that gives those guys at least a leg up on formulating a bond and some chemistry if it turns out that those two guys will be the starters week one against Minnesota in those two positions. That's the best I can do for you right now. There's no other way to cut it. Real Cold G comes back with another comment, says, if they can be top 15 or 20 in that O-line, I'll be very happy. I use this word all the time. Functional. That's it. For those of you who don't know what I mean by that, functional means that the unit performs at a good enough level that your coordinator can call any play he needs to in the playbook at any time because he reasonably believes that those players have a chance to succeed and get the play done correctly. That wasn't the case last year. Okay? It was not the case. A line is not functional when either A, it just flat out gets whipped and beat all the time to where you have to keep an extra guy in, a tight end or a running back or maybe both, or maybe have a chip and a half or whatever the case may be. If you have to keep extra people in, your line's not functional. Your line's also not functional if your coordinator has to take plays and chapters out of his playbook, crumple them up, can't run those. Nope. Would love to run the play on this play sheet. I really want to run the play on this play sheet. But I can't run that play because our guys can't do it. That's not functional. Real Cool G, I believe that the talent level on the guys that we're talking about who are competing for starting jobs is going to make this line functional. That's the key word. Because when you have an offensive line that is not functional or dysfunctional, if you will, you're hamstringing your offensive coordinator, and you're basically allowing the defense to play on a hockey term, power play. That's not good. So, functional is the key word. Next up. Watson Graves again, biggest question, O-line or secondary? The secondary is younger and more inexperienced than the offensive line, at least the group that we're talking about, which are going to compete for the starting jobs. Therefore, you would have to say secondary. Now, I think because 3/4 of the secondary, the two safeties, even the third safety, Newbin, he missed a little time, but he's shown a lot already. Banks has been there. Pinnock's been there. Belton has had a really great camp. Newbin's been there for most of camp. Got a little dinged, but he's done well. He played the game the other night. Did you see what he did to that guard? I forget the name of the Detroit Lions guard. Maybe one of you guys out there knows. There was a Detroit Lions guard. They tried a running play. Tyler Newbin, a safety, okay, a defensive back, flattened and blew up the Lions guard, who was the lead blocker on a running play. When's the last time you saw that? Tyler Newbin is one tough you-know-what. And I know it's the internet, but I'm not going to say it. S.O. whatever. Big time. That guy could play. So, I feel real good about those guys. Again, young and inexperienced. I like what they've done. Flott, we've talked about. We've talked about McLeod backing up Flott and now maybe having to start over him at the moment. So, I will say this. I happen to really like the Giants secondary. I know that they are a bit green. I know that Banks in his second year will still make some mistakes. I know that Newbin, if he does get a lot of playing time, will make rookie mistakes. And I know that whether it's Flott or McLeod, they're not elite number one lockdown corners. I get that. I totally understand that. But I think this secondary is, talent-wise, underrated. I think they've got talent in the secondary. But because of their inexperience, and what I said about the offensive line's experience, Runyon, Stinney, Illuminor, Van Roten, these guys have all done things in this league before and played on winning teams. I'll say you could make a case that the bigger question is in the secondary, but for a different reason than you would question the offensive line. Okay. Watson Graves says the Giants already have a top 10 D-line. Well, I'm talking about having a top 10 defense. I'm not talking about D-line. D-line, their front is probably amongst the best five in the NFL. I don't have a problem saying that. But it's about what is the whole defense going to do. I'll go further, Watson. I'll tell you this. The front seven, don't just stop at the D-line. Put Micah McFadden, Bobby Okereke, and I'm going to count Isaiah Simmons, who's basically a rover back there. I'm going to count him as part of the front seven. There's no question that front seven's in the top 10 of the league. Absolutely no question. All right. We go to next up. John Morano says, DeVito is a top number three quarterback. Where would he stand as a number two? Well, here's what I'll say, John. I think he'd be in the lower section of the number twos. You know, he's still only in his second year. He did play six games last season. Physically, he's got enough tools. I'm going to use that word again. Functional. He's got enough tools to be a functional NFL quarterback. He belongs in the league. But does he have any one particular tool that is outstanding or that makes him really special, where there's this one thing that you say, wow, he really does that one thing really, really well? I don't know that he does. So here's what I'll say. He probably would be on the lower rung of number twos in this league. I think that's very fair to say. I haven't really looked at it to study it. I did look at the number threes. And there's no doubt he's very high on the list of number threes. Could he potentially sneak into the low end of the number twos? I suppose possibly, depending upon where you see his ceiling. And maybe his ceiling is even higher than any of us imagine. Look, I'm not going to lie to you. When Tommy DeVito came to the Giants as an undrafted rookie free agent at the beginning of last spring, I didn't see how he was going to make it to the preseason. And Brian Daboll worked his butt off with him every single day to the point where he tutored DeVito and they brought him back for training camp in July. And he looked like a different quarterback. All of a sudden, it was like, wait a minute. Is that the same guy? He's got a real chance to maybe stick. Maybe they don't need to go somewhere else to get the practice squad quarterback. Maybe this guy is good enough to be. And by the end of the preseason, it was very obvious. DeVito belonged on the practice squad as the number three. And now, with six NFL games under his belt, including a last-minute game-winning drive against the Green Bay Packers. To me, Tommy DeVito is a number three on a 53. Again, where do you want to put his ceiling? If you think his ceiling is higher then maybe he sneaks into the back end of the number twos. I'm not sure that he's there yet, John. I think he could get there. But right now, I just think he's a really high number three, at least as we speak tonight. All right, let's see what else we got. Real Cole G, from what you've seen in the safety competition, who had the lead, Belton or Newbin? Well, Shane Bowen, the defensive coordinator, made it very clear it's Belton's job to lose. He said that last week. And then Newbin got a bit nicked up and was able to play in the game. He did some snaps and he did a great job. But Dane Belton has done nothing to lose that job. He has had a terrific offseason, a terrific training camp. And the defensive coordinator says that it's Belton's job to lose. I'm not going to argue with him. Why would I? I take him at face value. Until Belton, you know, does something to hurt his cause, he's the guy, I would think. And there's nothing wrong, by the way, if Newbin continues to do well, you could see some three safety package. I mean, nothing wrong with that at all. We've seen that in the past. Heck, the Giants won a Super Bowl with a three safety package, remember? Thanks for the question. Real Cole G says, functional offensive line. Got it. I'm so glad. I've been talking about this for so long. And sometimes people have had a hard time getting a hold of it. I can't describe it any more in detail than I already did. Really. I've given it to you as plain and black and white as it can possibly be. If you have a functional offensive line, you have a chance to be competitive. And if you have a dysfunctional offensive line, you put yourselves behind the eight ball and now you're climbing uphill. And it's very, very difficult to maintain competitiveness throughout the season if you're climbing uphill. So I'm glad you got it. Hope everybody else did too. All right, let's see now. We got about 13 minutes left. G-Man 7, I'm really excited about this defense. Newbin is going to be a beast. We have some dogs in the secondary. Hey, man. Look, if this young secondary matures quickly, as long as they can stay on the field, let's say that first, stay on the field, get your snaps, get your reps, learn, grow, mature. If that stuff happens, this secondary is going to be a heck of a lot better than a lot of people think. I think already the talent is better than people think. But as a unit, they could surprise a lot of people. And with a front seven that, in my opinion, is top 10 in the NFL, all of a sudden now, the offense has a really good unit on the other side of the ball to lean on. And oh, by the way, here's the other point that I've made on Big Blue Kickoff many times. Yes, the offensive line has to be functional. But what's the other way the Giants can help Daniel Jones? You know what it is? Have a really strong defense that's not going to force Daniel Jones to play from behind virtually every weekend. It's really simple, folks. They talk about complementary football. Giants need to play complementary football. They have to have a defense that's going to take some of the pressure off this offensive line, that will make it easier for them to be functional, and it will be easier for Dable to use all of the chapters in his playbook if the games remain competitive because the defense is holding other teams at bay and not letting them get a two-score lead in the first quarter, not letting them be up by 2.5 or 3 scores in the third quarter. Think about how many times last year the Giants were behind for virtually the entire 4 quarters of football. When you have to play uphill the entire day, everything becomes a whole lot harder. So yes, complementary football is the other way that the Giants should be better this year and can help that offensive line be functional and help Daniel Jones do some really sweet things in the passing game and help Brian Daboll open up and utilize more of his playbook. It really goes hand in hand. Everybody thinks it's just the offensive line. Well, that's the starting point. The trenches will always be the starting point in football. I agree with that. But a stout defense that can play at a top 10 level can change the entire environment that the offense has to work under. It can make things so much easier. All right, G-Man 7. Appreciate it. Oh, mentioned Simmons. Isaiah Simmons. My favorite defensive player in that draft. Misused by the Cardinals for years. Came to the Giants last year. And to be honest with you, I wasn't so sure that they used him the right way last year either. But now this year, they got him playing slot. They got him playing rover. They got him on the blitz. Whew. This guy is some kind of talent. And it looks like, as you heard during Hard Knocks, Shane Bowen was really anxious to get him back. And that's really good. And he was real anxious to come back. And that's why they were able to get a new deal done. So, I hope so. Gerald Abram, if I mispronounced your name. I know the team has invested in Locke as quarterback too, but I'm a supporter for Tommy D at quarterback too. He has a year under the system over Locke. Locke has better overall tools. He has more experience. Given those things, I don't expect that DeVito would jump him. But again, I'm not sure where Tommy DeVito's ceiling is right now. At one point, I didn't think it was very high. But as he played last year, that ceiling started to go up inch by inch by inch by inch. And now it's got some room. It's got some room. I hope Tommy does stick as the third quarterback. And, I think that'd be a good thing for the team. Of course, I also hope that Daniel Jones doesn't get hurt and that he can play for 17 games and do what he needs to do to assert himself as the Giants franchise quarterback. And I make no bones about that. I believe in Daniel Jones' skill set. I believe in his work ethic. I believe in his smarts. And I believe in his leadership skills as a teammate. Daniel Jones does have the qualities necessary to be a winner in this league. Heck, we saw it in 2022. Gerald, any chances he's listed as a quarterback two over Locke? He's talking about DeVito. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Got a lot of repeats here. I hope we got some new people on the chat. You know, come on, guys. We got a little bit of time. We got, 8 minutes left, 7 minutes left? Yeah, let's see if, maybe some other people can get in. But, I got some really good repeat people, so I don't mind going to those questions and comments. From what I've heard of Bowen's system, Simmons would be that third down safety in most packages. Well, no, what they really want to do is they want to make him the nickel on early downs and then a rover on third down where he can virtually do anything, including blitz. Let me ask you a question. You're an offensive coordinator, and real Cole G, you're an offensive coordinator. And you're facing a front of Thibodeau and Burns outside, Lawrence and Nacho in the middle, and you've designed your protection. Let's say you're going to double Burns, okay? So you got two on Burns, and now you got three on the other three. Now, if it's a third and long, chances are you're going to send either your tight end or you're running back into a pass route. You might get a chip, but you're probably going to send at least one of them into a pass route. Or if you go an empty backfield, which God knows I don't think you'd want to do against this defense, but if you want to go empty backfield, may the Lord help you. But you're welcome to try. And then send everybody out. The Giants now have the ability not only to win with that pass rush, but they also have the ability to send Simmons on a blitz. Now, with the guys they've already got up front, even your extra blocker or your chipper is going to be occupied. That means Isaiah Simmons is coming in against nobody. He will be a naked blitzer. Can you say quarterback pancake? Yeah. Pretty good. That would be pretty good for the Giants. So this is the kind of thing that Bowen's going to want to do as he messes with offensive coordinators' minds. Even though he's not a heavy blitzer, he wants to be able to use a corner or a safety, or for that matter, Isaiah Simmons, as in certain spots, as basically a naked blitzer, which is going to cause a living hell for that opposing quarterback. All right, let's go to another one here. Real Cold G's back in it. He says, what's the biggest difference you've seen between Wink and Bowen as a DC? Well, it's obvious. Wink says pressure breaks pipes. He wants to do as much downhill with his defense as possible. Send as many guys as often as possible to create havoc, to create crazy frenzied nerves on the offense so that they're going to screw up. That's the crux of what Wink Martindale wants to do. What does Bowen want to do? Bowen wants to say, all right, look, I want to diagram the plays. I have good enough players at different positions where I can out-diagram you and I can get one-on-one matchups and I can disguise zones. Maybe I can disguise some man coverages and we can use more of our X's and O's game plans rather than just throwing the kitchen sink at you and hoping high risk, high reward that the frenzy is going to cause the offense to malfunction. Bowen is more of, I'm not going to blitz a lot. All right, I'll pick my spots, but I'm not going to blitz a lot. I'm going to rely on my defensive front. I'm going to create one-on-one matchups for them, or maybe a naked matchup, and I'm going to rely on those guys to get done what they need to get done in the front. And then my back seven, okay, my back seven is going to be so detailed with how they're playing things, X's and O's wise, that we're going to be able to stop you. That's the biggest difference. Pressure breaks pipes with Wink. Shane Bowen, very detailed, oriented, X's and O's, fundamentally sound. Let's beat you cerebrally with our game plan instead of pressure breaks pipes and causing a frenzy. That's the best way I could describe it for you. All right. Oh, well, boy. A bunch of, man. It's all coming in here. All right. Evan Neal looked lost last year, says Watson Graves. The guy's been hurt his whole NFL career with the Giants. It has absolutely impacted his production. And yes, he needs to get his act together, and it needs to be done quickly. I want to try to get to the last couple of comments here real fast. Jay Smith, hoping for a good year from Daniel Jones. Would love for him to cement his spot as the franchise quarterback. Jay, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think he can do it. All right, we go to the next one. Real Cold G, scary thought, Simmons unblocked for opposing quarterbacks. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Jay Smith, so do you think Evan Neal is now a top candidate for swing tackle? Until he gets enough reps on the field with Carmen Brasillo, and Brasillo has an opportunity to mold this piece of clay, it's impossible to say what Evan Neal's role is going to be on this team this year. It's just too premature. No-No says, is McLeod better than Herndon for cornerback two? I think so. I think Herndon is better utilized in the slot than he is on the boundary. He's played both in his career. Remember, he was with the Jaguars. I happen to really like Nick McLeod a lot. Again, he's steady. He's reliable. He's got some length. He's got a frame to him. Sound tackler. Very smart player. Not that Herndon's a bad player, but I think he's more diminutive, and I think he's better off in the slot. I think McLeod's better off if you're going to need somebody out on the boundary. And finally, Real Cold G says, you're getting me pumped for the defense this year, Paul. Well, Real Cold, I'm just telling you what the facts are. Look at the talent on this defense. I mean, seriously, look at the talent. They have three impact guys on the front line. They got an impact guy in Bobby Okereke, playing middle linebacker. They got Micah McFadden, who busted out with over 100 tackles last year, and he's got coverage skills. Now, does he take occasionally a bad angle? Does he occasionally miss a tackle? Yes, but he's also now coming into his own. Last year, as a full-time starter, he took a big step. You hope he takes another step this year. So, and then if you want to count Isaiah Simmons as part of the front seven, do you really need me to tell you that that can be one of the NFL's most dangerous front sevens in the league? I don't think you need me to tell you that. Apparently, a lot of people around the country need to be told that, though, because I don't think they see it. Either that, or they're closing their eyes, or they need eye drops. I don't know. All right, real quick here, let's see. You're absolutely right about the talent level, Paul. On defense, is Real Cold G. Watson Graves says, let's go for 10,000 subs. I'm not sure I totally understand what that means, but you mean an Italian hero, I'm all for it. I had pizza tonight. Didn't go for the hero tonight. Had pizza. Maybe a hero to sandwich tomorrow. We'll see. But I won't be with you guys now until next Wednesday for another live program of the Big Blue Breakdown. We'll be back again next Wednesday, 8 o'clock p.m. live Eastern Time. We'll do another hour. Maybe we'll do another hour and a half? You guys kept me an extra half hour. I was thinking an hour tonight, but you kept me an extra half hour because you had a whole bunch of good things to say and for me to comment. Oh, 10,000 subscribers. How about that? Well, you know what? That would be cool. Fellas, look, here's the bottom line. I love talking Giants football. I could do it 28 hours a day, right? 28 hours a day, 8 days a week. How about that? And I mean that. I really would. But there are not enough outlets that will let me do that. So, you know, this is kind of a real outlet for me to be able to, to be me, not worry about a co-host, not worry about any other stuff. You know, just, hey, let's sit down, let's break bread, and let's talk New York Giants football. It's my favorite thing to do. So I hope you folks have enjoyed it. Once again, we're part of the New York Giants on SI Media Network. And you can hit me up on Twitter at GiantsWFAN. And, of course, you can always hit me up there or on the Big Blue Kickoff Show during the week on Giants.com. But that'll do it for now. Enjoy the game on Saturday, 1 o'clock, kickoff Eastern Time, WFAN-FM. Giants and the Texans. I'll be on the call with Sean O'Hara. Certainly hope to enjoy what should be a very interesting day as the Giants do play most of their starters for a substantial chunk of time, trying to get these guys some action before that week one opener against the Minnesota Vikings. All right, folks, we'll talk to you again live next Wednesday here on Big Blue Breakdown. Again, part of the Giants, New York Giants, on SI Network. We will see you next time.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.